The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
What we're seeing out of the district attorney for Manhattan after he's, downgraded, a number of felonies to misdemeanors, like 52% last year, and letting New York City become lawless. Now he wants to upgrade a misdemeanor to a felony, trying to backdoor in a federal charge that the feds passed on. And now he's trying to elevate it to a felony for clearly political purposes. This should send a chill down everyone's spine about what happens when you politicize justice. But more importantly is the interest in what happens when a local DA can go after a former president for clearly political reasons. If they can do that, they can go after you and me. It's politicized justice. That's what third world countries do.
And the real danger of this thing over the long term isn't so much narrowed to Trump. It's that now we have thousands of DAs around the country. Now that the Rubicon has been crossed, any one of them can find federal candidates or federal office holders and so forth, can find some state law they want to pursue the person on and get themselves into the national political arena.
If the feds, who they don't pass up on a case, they love to go after their political opponents as well. If they passed on the case, what's his case?
And frankly, it is the most novel, if not bizarre, convoluted legal theory I think I've ever heard of.
This is election interference. We don't know how. No one really knows how this is going to play out. We just know that it is going to be a factor. We have crossed the Rubicon from people saying, on the left, President Trump should be indicted, to the discussion is going to be President Trump was indicted. This political persecution is going to influence our politics every single day for the next year until a Republican nominee is chosen. And that is, by definition, election interference.
We have Letitia James. That's probably the most prominent one that I want to discuss, because that is, again, a corrupt system. They're going after the Trump Organization. Poor Alan Weisselberg is sitting in Rikers Island right now. Over what? Valuations? This is a real estate company that has done extremely well, is successful, and they're trying to take them and all of their individuals that lead that company down for nothing.
What we're seeing is a 15-year-long fundamental transformation of the United States of America, unleashed on America by Barack Hussein Obama. I played that clip last week for you from Glenn Beck, where he said basically the transformation is finished. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com. Just go to trumpetdaily.com, and you can watch the show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. here in the central time zone of the United States. Our mail processing facility in some ways has been taken over by the Red Cross and the local fire department and even some members of the news media. We've had some really horrible fires just north of the campus, and we're hoping to pull together a segment on that for tomorrow's show. So you'll want to tune in tomorrow to hear more about that. But so many of our brethren, our supporters living so close to this campus, all of them have had their homes protected. So we certainly appreciate divine intervention on behalf of God's people. But I think I heard yesterday there was something like 35 to 50 homes that have gone up in flames just north of this campus. In fact, they were suggesting that we evacuate the campus on Friday afternoon. Mainly, it hasn't been oppressively hot, but it's been very dry, and the winds are starting to whip up. So these fires can start for a variety of reasons. So something to keep in mind as you pray for God's work and for God's people. So Alvin Bragg, Donald Trump's on his way to New York, I think as we speak. He'll spend the night in New York and then turn himself in tomorrow, and then Bragg and all of the radical Democrats, they'll get what they want. They'll get the fingerprints. I guess they're still negotiating how he's going to show up, but they'll get the mugshot, and they're convinced, and so are a lot of never-Trumpers. They're convinced that as soon as they get the mugshot, As soon as they get the evidence, or at least the visual, that he's a criminal, that's it. It's over. Certainly this will finally separate Donald Trump from his MAGA movement. Finally, the MAGA people will wake up and realize that they've been supporting a criminal. Do you think that's what's going to happen? Obviously not. Obviously not. But they'll persist. Look at what they've done for the past 7 years. I mean, you have to give them credit like you would give the devil his due. He goes on the offensive. He goes on the offensive and make a phone call. Impeach! Contest an election. Impeach! And now this. The feds passed. Believe me, Biden's DOJ investigated this. They looked at every square inch of this so-called hush money. They looked into it and they said, no, you know what? We've got to take a pass. There's no hard evidence there that any crime was committed. The former DA, at the admonition of Alvin Bragg, looked at all of the evidence and said, you know what? Got to take a pass. There's no crime there. But now Alvin Bragg, he's an expert, I guess, when it comes to campaign financing and where the money goes on the ledger and hush money. Now he's found, what, 34 counts, the New York Times is reporting? Everyone knows. Everyone knows this is a political hit job. This is an attempt to assassinate the political career of Donald John Trump. That's what this amounts to. And they know it. They know it on the right, and they know it on the left as well. The timing of the announcement, late Thursday night, as you know, and then Bragg's off to dinner. There's no press conference, nothing like that. They just let it explode. It dominates the news cycle on Friday and really all through the weekend. 34 counts. This is from Andy McCarthy. Alvin Bragg is more accurately seen not as a law enforcement official, but as an elected progressive Democrat who won his political office in one-party Manhattan by vowing to his progressive base that he would exploit the district attorney's law enforcement powers against Trump, the Democrats' arch nemesis. He campaigned on getting Trump. And by the way, we should add that he campaigned on reducing felonies down to misdemeanors for actual criminals. You know, the murderers and the rapists. Let them out, but get him. Turn the misdemeanor into, it's not even a misdemeanor, but take a misdemeanor, kind of blend the state statute together with the federal law on campaign financing, and then just use untested legal theory, just as the New York Times has admitted. Untested legal theory? Trying to combine a state statute with the federal law? Taking a case that the feds already passed on, and 34 counts later, Donald Trump's on his way to New York so that these demons can get the mugshot. They're convinced that this is it. The walls are closing in. Remember that one? You'll hear it again. And this probably won't be the last of the indictments either. This is their new tool to interfere with elections. This is the leading candidate for the next presidential election, whether it's the Republican or the Democrat side. He's leading. And so they're trying to put him in prison. They're trying to put a gag order on him. They're trying to silence him. They're trying to blot him out. Andy McCarthy says, so how's this for... Well, it says, unlike the feds, Bragg has no jurisdiction over the expertise in federal campaign finance laws. He's not even really that good of a lawyer, but he has no understanding of federal campaign finance laws. So he's got the goons working for him. Who knows where they are? That one representative in the House that was big in the impeachment proceedings, or maybe Weissman, you know, the pit bull. They're probably all pitching in and then gleefully celebrating. We got the indictment. That's all that we need. Just now stretch it out. Let it stretch out for years. The goal here is to prevent him from being president. It says, how's this for a shocker? Bragg looked at exactly the same evidence as the feds did and has decided it's worth 34 criminal counts. Not one, not two, 34. 34. And so people here, they'll see the mugshot and then they'll hear 34 counts. Boy, this is serious. It's a sham is what it is. McCarthy says, why is Bragg doing this? Because for him to win the case in the all-important political realm, the court of public opinion, he just needs a jury to convict on one count. Then, no matter how flimsy the case Bragg has presented, Trump will be branded a convicted felon. By contrast, Trump can only win if he prevails on all 34 counts. So Trump's got to win on all 34. Bragg's just looking for one. He's throwing darts at a board in the middle of thick blackness, just hoping to hit a bullseye. Play that, is it 19? This is your typical Manhattan. It's an old clip, but there's people like this in Manhattan on every street corner.
Is this unprecedented to arrest a former president for not turning in documents?
Well, I don't know any other former president that had committed this many provable criminal acts.
But what are the provable criminal acts, I guess?
Provable criminal acts. Well, I'm done talking.
There are clueless jury members just like this all over Manhattan. It's 80% liberal. It's 80% Democrat. So, of course, Bragg's going to get voted in, campaigning on let the violent criminals out, but get Trump. That's the law of the jungle. That's jungle justice. Get Trump. Bragg says here, McCarthy says Bragg is inflating the number of counts just like he is inflating trivial misdemeanors into ostensibly serious felonies because he needs just one. You see, it's all made for TV. 34 counts. Wow. Campaign financing. Wow. Hush money. As if Donald Trump's the only one to have done this in U.S. history. This is from a couple years ago at Real Clear Policy. It says here, since 1997, the Office of Congressional Workplace Rights has paid out $18.2 million to settle 291 cases of workplace disputes for Congress, the Capitol Police, the Architect of the Capitol, and the Library of Congress. It says until June 18 of fiscal year 2018, two senators' offices and five House members' offices had claims filed against them. An additional House members' office had a case filed against them on June 19 through December 2019 out of the total 25. In other words, there's a slush fund in Congress to pay out hush money. That's right, a fund that they can all kind of tap, senators, House, even the Capitol Police. They can tap into it. Donald Trump paid this woman $130,000. These people have paid out $18.2 million over the course of a couple decades. It just goes on every year. It's normal. It's normal in Washington. It's normal in D.C. But Trump does it. And, well, you see how the Joe Obama Department of Justice springs to action. Bragg's already admitted that his funding for this investigation comes from the DOJ. What a convenient cover for Merrick Garland and the crooks, the criminals at the DOJ to silently or under the table fund the operation or the investigation, but then to be able to say, if it all blows up in their faces, well, I mean, he was just kind of a rogue district attorney. We didn't do it. I mean, we're above the fray on that. We're objective. We're the DOJ. The DOJ is behind this. They signed off on it. And above them, Barack Hussein Obama. He's the one pulling the trigger on all of this. I'll get to that in just a second. Listen, though, first to Alan Dershowitz from Over the Weekend, clip 5.
Through everything we know now, this looks like the weakest case in modern history. And when you have a Democrat who had run for office on the campaign to get Trump, and he's trying to indict the man who's about to run against the head of the Democratic Party, namely President Joe Biden, you better have a slam dunk case.
They don't have that. But let's just get Trump and try to push it back, and prevent him from running for president. Get Trump. What did he say? The weakest case in modern history? I mean, it really does demonstrate the sickness in Israel today. It's certain, like I said last week, it certainly proves that the election was stolen in 2020. Because they wouldn't be resorting to this now. This is their new tool because they know they can't steal it again in broad daylight like they did last time. So they've got to prevent him. He's gaining too much popularity. He's pulling in more of the African-American vote. That's a disaster. I mean, that's catastrophic for the Democrat Party. If they lose the black vote, well, they're losing it. But the corruption and sickness, Marjorie Taylor Greene on 60 Minutes last night, she called this the party, the Democrat Party, the party of pedophiles. Good for her to just stick to her guns. Leslie Stahl, of course, shakes her head, can't believe it. But look at the sickness that these people promote. There was another transurrection in the state capital of Texas over the weekend. You had the one in Tennessee a couple days before. All of these trans activists, these transurrections, just sweeping across the nation. We're only a week removed from the transgender that walked into the Christian school and shot up six people, murdered six Christians. Did the Biden administration even mention the term Christian all last week? They sure mentioned transgender. KJP said that, hey, the transgender community is what's really the under threat here. What a sick world this is. Upside down. Sodom and Gomorrah. Isaiah 3, verse 9, we declare our sin as Sodom and Gomorrah. We're just proud of it. And anyone that would dare speak the truth, that they make themselves a prey, just like the prophet Isaiah said. Listen to this from James Trusty. I think he's an attorney for Donald Trump, or at least has been. Clip 7.
There was a moment the former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tweeted out, the grand jury has acted upon the facts and the law. No one is above the law, and everyone has the right to a trial to prove innocence. Well, that really sent social media off, because obviously you're innocent until proven guilty. And, you know, all sides of this are weighing in, and the politics are just a big part of this.
Yeah, on the lawyer side, we have to kind of divorce ourselves from the nonsense of someone like Pelosi saying that. But, you know, it's not necessarily an innocuous slip when she makes a comment like that. That's a totally different view of American jurisprudence. And I think it's joined by other folks that are out there, again, because it's Donald Trump.
He's exactly right. It's not an innocuous slip. She didn't make a mistake. That wasn't a misstatement when she said, this is great. Donald Trump has a chance to prove his innocence now. Well, what about the fact that you're innocent until proven guilty? That's not the way radical communists think. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. Show me the man. Donald Trump is guilty. That's the premise you start from. And even if you get him on trumped up charges, get him. The president of El Salvador, just a few days ago, he's basically mocking our system of justice, saying if this were going on in our country, I mean, there'd be sanctions upon us. The U.S. would come in and try to intervene. You can't just silence the opposition political party. You can't just throw them in jail and then carry out an election and pretend that everything was above board. Everything was just normal. Totally perfect, as Chris Krebs said. This is from the New York Times over the weekend. For leaders abroad, the prospect of a Trump revival is ever present. Listen to this subhead. You can see it on your screen. The indictment last week of Donald John Trump has not changed the calculations of many world leaders who view his political resilience as inevitable. They know. The whole world knows. The whole world can see what's happening here. And deep in their heart of hearts, the Democrats know as well. Trump's unforgivable sin, this was Jeffrey Tucker earlier today, his unforgivable sin was that he was never supposed to be president in 2016. And so he's come under fire from the radical left, from Barack Obama, ever since. Jacob Siegel, he had this piece at Tablet where he talked about just how organized, how highly organized the deep state is. And really, although he doesn't just mention Obama right and left, Obama's certainly mentioned in the piece, but he shows how that there really is a single authority presiding over it at the top. How can you deny that? You can't look at what's happening these past 2 years, certainly not what happened in the summer of 2020 when Joe Biden was hiding in a basement and say, it must be Biden. It must be his leadership ability, his charisma. It must be his willingness to debate, to get out there and talk about the issues. As Rush Limbaugh said, even before 2020, the Democrats have given up on winning elections. It's all about stealing them now. They did it in 2020. There were shenanigans that went on, certainly in Arizona, in 2022. And then the lies that came after. It was supposed to be a red wave. Donald Trump's finished. If he's finished, leave him alone. They won't leave him alone. They can't leave him alone. He represents the single greatest threat to their fundamental transformation of the United States. As I say, it's pretty well finished already. But Trump is coming back. He's ready for war. It's going to be an interesting couple of days here as we see what plays out in that district, wherever the judge is going to be. I don't think the judge has been assigned yet or announced. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but there's plenty of corrupt judges, just as there are plenty of corrupt DAs in the country. And as you just saw, there's going to be plenty of jury members that go into it just knowing that Trump is guilty because he's Donald Trump. But coming back to this tablet piece, this is titled A Guide to Understanding the Hoax of the Century. It's a lengthy piece. I just want to hit a few high spots for you. But it says here, in his last days in office, President Barack Obama made the decision to set the country on a new course. On December 23rd, 2016, he signed into law the Countering Foreign Propaganda and Disinformation Act. And this all coincides, remember, and you heard it here first, as we were following that critical transition where Barack Obama was empowering the intel agencies. Even as he was just about to leave office, he was empowering these agencies in health to expand gain-of-function research. Fauci and others, they were out there saying there's going to be a pandemic, even in Donald Trump's term. How did they know? Well, this was all part of the attack. You know about Jim Comey, and you know about the dirty dossier, you know about the spying, all of this happening in that you know about the investigation. Remember how Obama had Brennan and others get this investigation together so fast to prove that Russia not only meddled in the election of 2016, but they helped Donald Trump. And then this article really has to do with the information war, about Joe Obama manipulating media, social media, big tech. It's amazing just how extensive the reach is. I mean, the deep state, as I've said so often, is really deep. This is swampiness through and through. It says here, something in the looming specter of Donald Trump and the populist movements of 2016 awakened sleeping monsters in the West. Disinformation, a half-forgotten relic. And I would wonder if it was really awakened in 2016. Certainly they were shocked that Donald Trump beat them. But Barack Obama had been working for 8 years to set up this apparatus to take the powers that were expanded greatly during the George W. Bush years to go after terrorists abroad, to use those powers, to take those powers, to turn them on political enemies at home. And I mean, once Donald Trump shocked the world in 2016, well, there's your enemy. There's enemy number one. He must be attacked relentlessly. It says here, disinformation, a half-forgotten relic of the Cold War, was newly spoken of as an urgent existential threat. All of a sudden, everything was about disinformation. And they were the ones spreading it. That's what's so unbelievable about this history. It's recent history. But Hillary Clinton, using campaign funds, by the way, to create this dirty dossier, and she just gets slapped with a little fine. That's the way all of these kinds of things are treated, if they're even violations. There's, in the case of Trump, it's not even a violation. He used his own funds. And Cohen has admitted that. It says here, the message from the U.S. defense establishment was clear. To win the information war, an existential conflict taking place in the borderless dimensions of cyberspace, the government needed to dispense with outdated legal distinctions between foreign terrorists and American citizens. That's outdated. We've got to change it, said Obama on his way out. Since 2016, the federal government has spent billions of dollars on turning the counter-disinformation complex into one of the most powerful forces in the modern world, a sprawling leviathan with tentacles reaching into both the public and private sector, which the government uses to direct a whole-of-society effort that aims to seize control over the internet. This is the kind of thing that you would think of when you talk about the CCP in China or Putin in Russia. But it's happening right here in America, and the Twitter files reveal it. They've been exposed. Has anybody gone to jail for that, by the way? The collusion? Look, what about the feds colluding with Alvin Bragg's office to carry out this political persecution against Donald Trump that you're going to see on TV tomorrow afternoon? Colluding, Bragg's office, just a state DA, and then the DOJ, Barack Obama's DOJ. Tablet says here, it was not enough for a few powerful agencies to combat disinformation. The strategy of national mobilization called for not only the whole of government, but also whole of society approach, according to a document released by the GEC in 2018. And then they quote the document, to counter propaganda and disinformation, the agency stated, will require leveraging expertise from across government, tech, and marketing sectors, academia, and NGOs. I mean, it's got to touch everything. We've got to make sure that the message that goes out is coming from the administrative state. And if it's anything that's contrary to that, it must be blotted out. How many instances have we seen of that, thanks to the Twitter files and other revelations? Says here, this is how the government created war against disinformation, because the great moral crusade of its time. CIA officers in Langley came to share a cause with hip young journalists in Brooklyn, progressive nonprofits in D.C., George Soros-funded think tanks in Prague. It was a worldwide network of disinformation. Tablet says, the mobilization, which began as a response to the supposedly urgent menace of Russian interference. You see, it started on a hoax. It started on a lie, which is exactly what you would expect with the devil. There is no truth in him. John 8 and verse 44, it says it now evolves into a regime of total information control that has arrogated to itself the mission of eradicating abstract dangers such as error, injustice, and harm. Something monstrous is taking shape in America, it says. That's the kind of language you use when you're right at the tail end of the fundamental transformation of the United States. What we're seeing is something monstrous. It says, finally, in the final 2 weeks of the Obama administration, the new counter-disinformation apparatus scored one of its most significant victories, the power to directly oversee federal elections that would have profound consequences for the 2020 contest between Trump and Joe Biden. See, they changed all the rules. They got more control over elections. They told us that a pandemic was coming. They used the pandemic as a pretext to send out 100 million mail-in votes. Then when it came to Election Day, they stretched it out into Election Week. Then they kicked out the poll watchers. Then all of those nefarious activities were happening in the wee hours of the night. You remember it. We told you about it. We've told you about it repeatedly. And then when Trump contested, just like the Democrats did in 2016 and many other election cycles before that, by the way, and when they do that, like Stacey Abrams in 2018, they're praised. They're promoted. When Trump does it, he's guilty of insurrection. This is not the system of justice that was set up by the founding fathers of the United States. This is something quite different. This is something monstrous. My father writes in AUA, this is America Under Attack. I think we just finished another update to this book that'll be at the printer for a while, but this one's powerful as it is. We just received that from the printer last August. So if you don't have a copy, call our operators today and request your free copy. That's 1-866-930-3024. That's the 800 number if you live in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. My father writes, the 2020 election was hacked and it reduced America's entire electoral system to shambles. It says, and it's all because of the radical left's unrestrained assault on America's democratic institutions and traditions, including the Constitution and the rule of law. It says thousands of people and institutions were directly or indirectly involved. Thousands! That's what we write about in America Under Attack. I mean, and then you read this tablet piece, and it shows just how far-reaching and extensive the tentacles of the deep state really and truly are. It says here, thousands of people and institutions were directly involved. Virtually all of America's top media organizations and personalities were complicit, as well as the powerful tech companies and many of the nation's top politicians. They're all in on it. It says here, but this vast network of lies, corruption, and lawlessness all points back to one man, Barack Obama. He's at the head. He's the prophesied Antiochus. He's the one running the show. He's the one running the presidency from his basement, just as he joked about with Stephen Colbert. It says, but with this vast network of lies, corruption, well, I read that. It says, as we will see, this epic scandal would not have taken place if not for Obama's leadership of the Democratic Party and the radical left. And there is proof that he was not only aware of the plot to pervert the 2020 election, but was directly or indirectly leading those pulling the strings. Let me just give you the last couple sentences of that tablet piece. I read it a moment ago, but it says here, in the final 2 weeks of the Obama administration, the new counter disinformation apparatus scored one of its most significant victories, the power to directly oversee federal elections that would have profound consequences on 2020. You heard it here first, America Under Attack. We often say about our Trumpet magazine, tomorrow's news. Today, listen to Stephen Miller on with Tucker Friday night, clip 16.
Then Donald Trump comes up onto the scene of Washington, a man with whom they have no relationship, a man who has no affinity for them, who doesn't care about them, who doesn't value what they value. And this for them is a panic moment. It is a panic moment. And we are now living in the seventh year of that panic, turning our entire democracy upside down. And I will tell you, if a prosecutor in Manhattan can take control of our entire presidential election process, then by what definition can we say that we even have a democracy in this country?
Right. No, I mean, we were mocked, I thought justly, by the president of El Salvador yesterday, who said we're not going to take any more lectures about democracy from a country that interferes in its own elections like this. And unfortunately, he's right.
Miller there saying that Bragg has taken control of the next presidential election. And of course, we know that the power behind him, the feds already passed on this case, as did the previous DA, but not Bragg, not now. No, this is the time where they've got to unleash all of these indictments against Donald Trump, and they're not going to stop at Donald Trump. That's what these weak never Trumpers need to wake up and realize. The communists are not going to stop at one man. They're going to stamp out all opposition. That's the goal. That's the aim. Look at history. Look at recent history in some of these communist takeovers. Listen to Tucker again from his show, Friday night, clip 17.
So again, the irony in everything is irony at this point is that they've been lecturing us for many years about election interference, but you're watching it happen right in front of you. The prosecution of Donald Trump is election interference. He's the Republican frontrunner. Leaks about his imminent arrest began coming out on March 17th. That was just 24 hours after the House Oversight Committee traced $1 million in payments from China to several members of Joe Biden's immediate family. Kind of weird that no one's talking about that now.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, they, as I say, they go on the offensive. All of these reports that Jim Comer finally receiving the evidence he had been asking for, to show that the CCP was paying off the Biden family. And the next day, you have the communists and the media breaking the news that Trump's about to be indicted. That's incredible. It's relentless, as I say. They will not stop. They'll never be satisfied. They will continue until they destroy all opposition. Jim Jordan, he's the head of the Judiciary Committee in the House, at the moment. He's a Republican. He did a pretty good job on the impeachment proceedings. But listen to him yesterday on Maria Bartiromo's show as she's basically asking, you know, what are you guys going to do? I mean, this is happening. It's happening right now. This is clip 8.
Well, when are you expecting to speak with Alvin Bragg? If he does not come to testify in front of the Judiciary Committee, will you subpoena him?
Everything's on the table, Maria. We're going to talk with the other chairman and look at the response. We just got his letter back. We're reviewing that. But we think that this is here's, I think, maybe the most important thing. We think this is bigger. This involves all of us. I don't think it's an accident that the same week we learn that the IRS knocked on Matt Taibbi's door while he's testifying in Congress, that same week is when we learn a left-wing district attorney, a Soros-backed district attorney, is going to go after the former president of the United States. I mean, that is a scary thing. They paid a foreigner. Think about this. They paid a foreigner to put together a fake dossier to spy on President Trump's campaign. The FTC sends letters to Twitter demanding who are the journalists you're talking to. And then, of course, when Matt Taibbi is testifying, the IRS is knocking on his door. And now an indictment of a former president, the guy who happens to be leading in every single poll. This is about all of us. This is about going after anyone who opposes the left's agenda, the establishment's agenda. And that's maybe the most scary thing of all.
Well, he does a good job there of listing off all of these communist attacks. As I say, it's relentless. But when asked, you know, what are you going to do? He just says, you know, everything's on the table. Well, it's happening. He's indicted tomorrow. You guys are going on Easter vacation for 2 weeks. So what's the House going? You have a majority now. That's what Sundance says at Conservative Treehouse. It says the only way these radical leftists are going to slow down is if Republican state AGs and local DAs start prosecuting Democrats for similar issues. He's talking about the state DAs at other areas or in red states. But I mean, even in the House, they can't kick off a pre-dawn raid on some of these radicals, but they do have more power. They have more power to, as Bartiromo says, to subpoena Bragg and others. They've got the power of the purse. What about defunding the DOJ or the FBI? The DOJ is behind the Bragg investigation. What about the Hunter laptop and the something like 400 crimes that are right there on video? Leave aside the treason and taking money from the CCP. But what about paying all the hookers and buying all the drugs and having the illegal handgun and all those? Those are all crimes. You hear Democrats go on and on. No one's above the law. Well, Hunter Biden certainly is. Joe Biden certainly is. His brother certainly is. The whole family is. Barack Obama's above the law. Hillary Clinton destroyed 33,000 emails that were under subpoena. But that's no obstruction of justice. Comey comes out and just kind of slaps her on the wrist and says that, you know, no reasonable prosecutor is going to go after Hillary Clinton. Of course no prosecutor would, because she's Hillary Clinton. But if you're Trump, if Trump destroyed one email that was subpoenaed, what do you suppose they'd do with that? 33,000. You may have heard the news on Friday of this Douglas Mackey. He created this meme. This was back in 2016. This meme that says, save time, avoid the line, vote from home, vote on November, what is it, November 8th? And I think that was the day after the election. It was a joke. And they had jokes like that on the other side too. You know, Clinton supporters that were telling Trump supporters, you know, vote a day late. A meme. The guy who created this is found guilty and could go to prison for 10 years. 10 years for a joke. To which I respond, is this a joke? Are you serious? They're serious about persecuting political opponents. This is from American Greatness. This is Soviet-style intimidation. It has or had no place in America. That's what's happening here. Banana time for the rule of law, says the title. It says it is the kind of thing that once upon a time we would hear about and deplore in distant lands ruled by communist despots. Now we emulate what we once deplored. Increasingly, alas, such totalitarian expedients are business as usual in an American regime that is staffed by apparatchiks of both parties who are drunk on power and care not a whit for free speech, individual liberty, or the impartial enforcement of the law. What they care about is the consolidation and perpetuation of their own power, period, full stop. That's, that could be in America Under Attack. There's words to that effect in here. America Under Attack. Tucker Carlson was right, it says, to call the verdict against Mackey, the guy who created a meme, the most shocking attack on freedom of speech in our lifetimes. I mean, we're really at the bottom, as I said last week. You can sense that this is a tipping point, isn't it? And then we come into this week, and whatever happens tomorrow, and of course we'll have some things to say about it, whether it's tomorrow or the next day. It says here, there is absolutely no evidence, Carlson pointed out, that anyone's sacred right to vote was impinged by Mackey's meme. That's the way the prosecutors went at him. You went after the poor black ladies in the inner city. I mean, they could see this meme and show up a day late to vote. Well, by 2020 standards, that would be just fine because it was actually a five-day election. But back in 2016, you know, so long ago, that was back when we actually had Election Day. Can you believe it? So ancient, right? But the same cannot be said of the thousands of people who were essentially disenfranchised by the Democratic machine in 2016, 20, and 22. The entire Russia collusion hoax, for example, was cooked up and paid for by Hillary Clinton and put into action by a coalition of the willing and the media, the Justice Department, and the intelligence services of the United States. Its initial aim was to suppress the vote of Trump supporters. Is anyone going to be punished for that? For that kind of election interference? And now they just carry on to the next weapon, indictments. Indictments galore. Listen again to Maria Bartiromo as she presses Jim Jordan, clip 9.
Well, you also have right now the bank records that your colleague James Comer has released showing that money did go from Chinese officials tied to the Chinese Communist Party to Rob Walker's account, which is a partner, a former partner of Hunter Biden, yeah, and then distributed to Biden family members. So it's all happening around the same time. And what about that? You've got an entire committee about the weaponization of government.
Yeah, and the fundamental question there is what were they getting paid for? What service did they provide? You got these millions of dollars coming into this account and get sent out to various members of the Biden family for what? What did they do? What service, what benefit, what work did they do? That's the fundamental question. And that's why Mr. Comer's committee, the Oversight Committee, is looking into this and looking at all these, quote, suspicious activity reports.
We're looking into it. And the big question is, what did they do? And this is all happening at the same time that they're trying to put Trump in prison. They're trying to lock up Trump. They're considering a gag order on Donald Trump. And these guys, as much power as they now have with a majority, they're taking 2 weeks off. 2 weeks off. It's time to rest, I guess, for them. It's not a time of rest for Donald Trump. It never is. It never is. He always has to be aware. He always has to be on guard. He goes on the offensive, to his credit. But these others, even the ones that have spoken in defense of Trump these past few days, as I told you last week, I mean, it was refreshing on Thursday night to see the entire primetime coverage on Fox News talking about how outrageous this is, how this is Banana Republic stuff. And a lot of that continued through the weekend. You saw it in the opening montage. You saw Bill Barr, actually, defending Donald Trump, saying that if this happens with one rogue DA in a blue state, it kind of sets a precedent for people to be doing this all over the country. But now listen to Bill Barr. He worked for Donald Trump. Listen to the advice that he gives to Donald Trump and his team of lawyers as they prepare for this sham trial. This is clip 12.
I'll ask you what I asked Jim Trustee as well. If the president was your client, would you put him on the stand? Because I got to imagine in any of these cases, if it gets to trial, he's going to want to defend himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not his lawyer. You know, generally, I think it's a bad idea to go on the stand. And I think it's particularly a bad idea for Trump because he lacks all self-control. And it'd be very difficult to prepare him and keep him testifying in a prudent fashion.
What an unbelievably arrogant statement. Donald Trump lacks all self-control. Look at the smirk there at the end. He's smiling. He's making the round supposedly to defend Donald Trump against this unjust attack from the New York DA. But there he is now. My advice is that Donald Trump not testify because he lacks all self-control. You know who lacks self-control in all of this? That would be Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. These people are unhinged. These people are out of control as they carry out this fundamental transformation of the United States. Here, Alvin Bragg, who previously discouraged the last DA from going after Trump on this, now he's going after him. Who's out of control? Is it Bragg or is it Trump? Trump's out of control? Are you serious? What you saw in that smirk right there is exactly why the Republicans won't fight, because so many of them hate Donald Trump too. They can see the grave injustice, but they hate him. They hate the bad orange man. They know it's kangaroo court stuff. They know it's banana republic stuff. They know this is right out of the Soviet playbook for intimidation. But they hate Donald Trump. Have you ever seen his tweets? I mean, come on. Alan Dershowitz on Fox Business, the host, asks him about one of the tweets or the Truth Social posts that he put out. This is clip 6.
President Trump has responded on Truth Social. He says, they only brought this fake, corrupt, and disgraceful charge against me because I stand with the American people. They know I cannot get a fair trial in New York. Alan, real quick, can he get a fair trial in New York?
Absolutely not. Do you think any juror or judge is going to want to come home to his family and friends and say, I'm the man who freed Trump and allowed him to run to become the next president of the United States?
Fair trial in Manhattan? Absolutely not, says this liberal. He's a liberal himself. He knows the reality here. He knows that that jury is going to be filled with guys like the one on the street that couldn't think of one thing, one crime that Donald Trump has actually committed. Listen to this commentary. This is on CNN from over the weekend, clip 10.
There are people who are outraged by this indictment. They were not outraged by Trump's attempt to overturn a Democratic election. They were not outraged by the violence on January 6th. They were not outraged by an illegal phone call to the Georgia Secretary of State, an illegal phone call to Volodymyr Zelensky. They are not outraged by multiple credible accusations of sexual harassment, assault, and rape. They're not outraged by Trump's sexist, bigoted, homophobic, xenophobic rhetoric. They're not outraged by his white nationalism. Mm-hmm. They're not outraged by his defense of anti-Semitism and neo-Nazis. They're not outraged by all that stuff. So with all due respect, no one should care that these people are outraged by this indictment.
That's her way of saying, I know we got him on a nothing charge here, a big fat nothing burger. But listen, he's homophobic. Listen, he's made 2 illegal phone calls. Illegal phone calls? You mean calling the Georgia Secretary of State was illegal? Or as President of the United States to call Zelensky? That's illegal? What is wrong with these people? They're deranged. Ephesians 2 and verse 2. The devil is the prince of the power of the air. He's guilty because he's Donald Trump. And if you're outraged by this latest episode, this latest attack, you keep your mouth shut. Listen, he's a white nationalist. Mark Levin last night gave a pretty good monologue on what is happening in the United States at the moment. And here again, it's something that you would read right out of America Under Attack. Listen to this, clip 1.
As I speak, there have been four grand juries investigating the man for the most preposterous phony crimes, all run by Democrats, all in overwhelmingly Democrat cities, with Democrats sitting on the grand juries, with Democrat judges, Democrat potential juries. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem likely, most likely, to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. That's the Declaration of Independence. And that will be considered provocative, what I just read to you. There are certain elements in this government, the use of federal law enforcement, the use of Democrat district attorneys, the use of George Soros's money, and so forth and so on. If they are not thrown off, if they are not at least controlled, well, then we will lose our republic.
It's all the more sobering when you hear him quoting the Declaration of Independence, words that would be taken as provocative from the communist left. In fact, before he quoted the Declaration, he said, "What I'm about to read to you probably puts me on an FBI watch list." We've experienced some government tyranny in our history, says Mark Levin, and this is what the founders said we needed to do to remedy it. He went on to quote from Thomas Paine, who wrote The Crisis. It was at a real low point during the Revolution. And he said famously, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of his country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell," it says, "is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph." Washington's army, you had all these people going AWOL, returning back to their families. I think there was one point in the war where for everyone that was killed in battle in the Continental Army, 17 died of disease, sickness. You know about Valley Forge and some of the other low points for that fledgling army of the United States of America. "These are the times that try men's souls," said Paine. There's a verse in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 3 where Paul says to the spiritual soldiers in God's army that we've got to be able and willing to endure hardness, to be battle-tested, to be ready to go on the offensive. We don't take up arms in the physical sense, but spiritually we do wield a weapon. It's the Holy Bible. It's our sword, and it's an offensive weapon. Well, I have more, but that's all that we have time for today. Sadly. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. And of course, we'll see you tomorrow.